guys are, you guys are fuzzy looking. You're very, very fuzzy looking.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, it's probably this camera. I probably ought to try something. Are we moving tonight? Oh, let me introduce us here. We just started the video. Hello, everyone. This is the Fifth Epical Revelation Fellowship. The air conditioner goes on. And this is January 29th, and tonight we're continuing a study on paper 3, and we're going to start on section 3. And for you, those of you who are just joining us, you can see the first part of this paper on our Sunday night meeting, which was on the 26th,
right?
It's online. And let's say a little prayer, and we will get started tonight. You want to pray tonight? Huh? Oh, I'm Dr. Roger Paul, and this is my wife, Diane. All right, let's start.
Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for this opportunity to come together and share each other's company and to study and learn the revelation that's given to us through the religion. We are so grateful to be here and to be asked that you bless our minds and make us and help us to be receptive to our knowledge that is brought forth and to assimilate it and also to spread it around to everyone.
Universal knowledge. And how about if I start out reading tonight and we'll go from there, alright? Y'all see anybody else pop in, let me know. God's universal knowledge. This is on page 48A of the book, section 3, paper 3, section 3, paragraph 1. God knows all things. The divine mind is conscious of and conversant with the thought of all creation. His knowledge of events is universal and perfect. The divine entities going out from him are a part of him, and who balances the clouds is also perfect in knowledge. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, said your great teacher of the insignificant sparrow, one of them shall not fall to the ground without my Father's knowledge, and also the very hairs of your head are numbered. He tells the number of the stars. He calls them all by their names. Can y'all, I was telling Diane before we started here, can y'all imagine the calmness of God to be able to do all this, keep track of all these universes upon universes upon universes, and all the billions and billions and billions of creatures and beings that are inside that? It's just overwhelmingly phenomenal. Say it again, Rodney.
It's unfathomable.
It really is unfathomable. It's beyond imagination. Y'all let me adjust this camera up here real quick. I look up and see it. And I must have hit it when I set it up here. Adjust a little bit. Yeah, too far. That's a little better. Sorry. I looked up and we're pointing way off there. All right. Bill, would you take the next paragraph there, please?
Okay. That's 332, right?
Right.
Okay. The Universal Father is the only personality in all the universe who does actually know the number of the stars and planets in space. All of the world... universe that he could utterly seen the affliction of my people. I have heard their cry, and I know their sorrow. For the Lord looks from heaven, he beholds all the sons of men. from the place of his habitation. He looks upon all the inhabitants of the earth. Every creature traveled, made fully safe. He knows the way I take. And when he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold. God knows our downsitting and our uprising. He understands our thoughts afar off and is acquainted with all our ways. All things are naked, open to the eyes of him with whom we have to do. And it should be a real comfort to every human being to understand that he knows your frame. He remembers that you are dust. Jesus, speaking of the living God, said, the Father knows what you have need of even before you ask him.
So he not only knows what's coming, what's going, what's coming in the future. So he already knows what we need before we ask, because he has foreknowledge of all things, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's hard to imagine a being that can keep all this knowledge of all beings and all things in its consciousness all the time, isn't it? You know, the omnipotence of God is just truly amazing. It really is. All right, Rodney, would you take the next paragraph, please?
Sure. God is possessed of unlimited power over the law of holiness. His consciousness is universal. His personal perfect encompasses all personalities, and his knowledge of even the lowly creatures is supplemented indirectly through the descending series of divine sons and directly through the divine body gestures. And from her, your spirit is all the time, everywhere present.
Okay, so we have the thought adjusters, right? We have the spirit of truth, the sun circuit, right? And we have the infinite spirit, the Holy Spirit, the creative mother spirits. So we have all three of the Trinity, which knows what we do at all times. Isn't that amazing?
That's
pretty special. So, you know, even if one of them was not paying attention for some reason, which will never happen, the other two would pick up everything that goes on, right?
Right.
So we've been taken care of through eternity, really. All right. Linda, would you take the next paragraph, please?
We are not wholly certain as to whether or not God chooses to foreknow even that of sin. But even if God should foreknow the free will acts of his children, such foreknowledge does not in the least abrogate their freedom. One thing is certain, God is never subjected to surprise.
So he knows what we're going to decide before we decide it, but we still have the free will to do it, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
So there's no surprises to God, is there? None whatsoever.
Right.
Never has been, never will be, right?
Omnipotence does not imply the power to do the non-doable and the ungodlike act. Neither does omniscience imply the knowing of the unknowable. But such statements can hardly be made comprehensible to the finite mind. The creature can hardly understand the range and limitations of the will of the Creator.
Okay, I'd like to do a little offshoot. Just one second. And tell y'all what omniscience is. It has to do with foreknowledge, okay? It says God derives from adjusters and personality circuit, supplemented by divine sons and the infinite spirit. So God knows and has this foreknowledge because of these three spirit entities we just talked about just a second ago, doesn't it? The adjuster, the spirit of truth, and the Holy Spirit, right? Or the infinite spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Let's go. Let's keep going. Give me 1 second. Let me get the slide back on. That's kind of an interesting explanation they have in the notes on that. God's limitlessness. The successive bestowal of himself upon the universes as they are brought into being in no wise lessens the potential of the power or the store of wisdom as they continue to reside in the repose of the central personality of deity. In potential of force, wisdom, and love, the Father has never lessened aught of his possession, nor become divested of any attitude of his glorious personality as the result of the unstinted bestowal of himself upon the paradise sons, upon his subordinate creations, and upon the manifold creatures thereof. So, what are they talking about here? They're talking about God's bestowal of himself, of deity, through the sons, isn't it? Or that's what they're mentioning, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we have his bestowal of himself through the thought adjusters also, right? So that's a dual entity of God bestowing himself on all the creatures of the universe. When he sends his sons out, he sends part of himself out through the first son, and then he also sends himself out through the thought adjuster, right? So we benefit in two ways. Okay. Who's next? Bill, would you take the next one?
Okay. God's limit.
Now the next one, Bill, the creation of... Yeah.
The creation of every new universe calls for a new adjustment of gravity. But even if creation should continue indefinitely, eternally, even to infinity, so that eventually the material creation would exist without limitation, still the power of control and coordination reposing in the Isle of Paradise would be found equal to and adequate for the mastery, control, and coordination of such an infinite universe. And subsequent to this bestowal of limitless force and power upon a boundless universe, the infinite would still be surcharged with the same degree of force and energy. The unqualified absolute would still be undiminished. God would still possess the same infinite potential, just as if force, energy, and power had never been poured forth for the endowment of universe upon universe.
Okay, so let's think about this for a second. We're talking about limitless universes here. So, and the unqualified absolute, y'all remember what the unqualified absolute, we're talking about out beyond the outer space levels, aren't we? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, we're talking about God has force in paradise and energy in paradise adequate to go out towards all known existence right now and then never stop. What an amazing thing. You know, that's a lot of power. Okay, and we can't just forget just the gravity and the energy and stuff, but we're talking about spiritual forces too, aren't we? You know?
Yeah.
So there's this unlimited amount of created and deity beings that's being created constantly to take over and populate these new areas constantly over and over over again. It's a non-stopping thing. And it makes you start to kind of understand a little bit about what infinity is all about, isn't it? You know, it doesn't stop. There is no stop to infinity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And God's got the energy to take care of all this, which is just amazing. It is kind of a pity that we as humans try to limit God so much, and he has all this power. Isn't that amazing? But we do. All right. Rodney, would you take the next one?
All right. I'm still
contemplating that last thing.
Okay. That's me. And so with wisdom, the fact that mind is so freely distributed to the thinking of the rose and millwives and powerses, the central source of divine wisdom. As the universe is multiplied, and beings of the realms increase in number to the limits of comprehension, if mind continues without end to be bestowed upon these beings of high and low estate, still will God's sinful personality continue to embrace the same eternal, infinite, and all-wise mind.
Now, who's in charge of mind? Do y'all remember?
Infinite Spirit.
The Infinite Spirit. So the power of the Infinite Spirit and the power of the Trinity is equal to this task of ever-expansion, isn't it? I mean, it never stops, right?
It's incredible.
It really is incredible. It's amazing. Linda, would you take the next one?
Sure, I had to unmute.
Okay.
The fact that he sends forth spirit messengers for himself to indwell the men and women of the world and other worlds in no wise lessens his ability to function as a divine and all-powerful spirit personality, and there is absolutely no limit to the extent or number of such spirit monitors which he can and may send out. This giving of himself to his creatures creates a boundless, almost inconceivable future possibility of progressive and successive existences for those divinely endowed worlds. And this prodigal distribution of himself as these ministering spirit entities in no manner diminishes the wisdom and perfection of truth and knowledge which repose in the person of the all-wise, all-knowing, and all-powerful Father.
Okay, so what are we talking about, these spirit messengers from himself to indwell men? We're not only talking about what? The thought adjusters, but who else? We could consider the Creator Sons, right? All the ministering spirits would probably, you could probably include them in that too, couldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
You think of the great numbers of ministering spirits that God sends up out to help us. It's really almost inconceivable the amount of these spirits we come in contact with before we become finaliters. And then, not only that, after we become finaliters, many of these spirits will go on this adventure with us and help us out, won't they?
Yeah.
So, and that's their goal, right? Especially the angels. They want to be included in the mortal coral finality also, don't they? So, you know, it's a great goal.
To the mortals of time, there is a future. That God inhabits eternity. Even though I hail from near the very abiding place of deity, I cannot presume to speak with perfection of understanding concerning the infinity of many of the divine attributes. Infinity of mind alone can fully comprehend infinity of existence and eternity of action.
So the entity that's teaching us these things doesn't understand all of it either, do they?
So, good to know.
So we're not alone, you know, trying to grasp on to these things. And I want to mention something that I did on Sunday, since most of y'all weren't there on Sunday, about what this book is about. And I've said this twice in the last two meetings I'm in, but I'm going to say it again. You know what this book is, y'all? It's a primer. It's a primer for the mansion worlds. Think about this for a second with me. This book was given to us as a revelation to prepare us for what's coming in the future. It didn't it? Okay? Not only now, but what's coming in the future also. And then you think about how fortunately we are to have such a great primer. Like, we're in kindergarten school right now for the mansion worlds, aren't we? Think about it that way.
That's not that thought. I figured it too.
Yeah.
That's what I've always thought. Ever since I was reading this book, I've always thought, well, this must be a primer for the next life.
That's right. It is. I really believe that. But and think how fortunately we are to have this and be able to study it. And our responsibility to share this with as many beings as we can, because that's going to give them a jump on their future also, won't it? Right? So, I just...
Yeah, now this is stuff that we would learn
That's right. This is if we don't learn it in this world, the same stuff we have to learn when? On the First Mansion world, right? They'll have to put us in remedial classes. So we not only have to go through the primer, but we have to be in remedial classes just to bring us up to speed about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is some pretty important stuff. It really is. Okay. Who's up? That is me. Mortal man cannot possibly know the infinitude of the Heavenly Father. Finite mind cannot think through such an absolute truth or fact. But this same finite human being can actually feel, literally experience, the full and undiminished impact of such an infinite Father's love. Such a love can be truly experienced, albeit while quality of experience is unlimited. Quantity of such an experience is strictly limited by the human capacity for spiritual receptivity and by the associated capacity to love the Father in return. So it's only our own capacity that allows us, that limits us in love and learning and experience. And that's true with what? One another. Right? Our mortal men. You know, that's why Jesus was so adamant about loving one another, wasn't he? You know? Brotherhood of man. Fatherhood of God, brotherhood of man. Right? That's what it's all about. That's his lesson.
Yeah.
All right. Bill, would you take the next one?
Yes. Finite appreciation of infinite qualities far transcends the logically limited capacities of the creature because of the fact that mortal man is made in the image of God. There lives within him a fragment of infinity. Therefore, man's nearest and deepest approach to God is by and through the love. For God is love. And all of such a unique relationship is an actual experience in cosmic sociology. The creator-creature relationship. The father-child affection.
Okay, so... Let's break this down just a little bit, okay? This first, God gives us this fragment of infinity. And what are we talking about there? Thought adjuster, right? All right? And our dearest and deepest approach to God is by and through love. And who are we talking about? The thought adjuster, right? Loving our thought adjuster, loving that fragment of God, okay? And then they go on to tell us this is an actual experience in cosmic sociology. What are they talking about there? They're talking about the social reactions of us in the future in the universe as we go on. Right? Alright? And our best relationship we can think of for our relationship with our Father is what? The father-child relationship. And that affection that you should have for your Father. Right?
Mm-hmm.
What a wonderful thing. Isn't that beautiful?
Oh, you all, I'm going to have to swing off. I've got some stuff to do downstairs with my wife.
Okay.
And
well, we're glad you could join us as long as you did, Bill. Please come back and see us again.
It's nice seeing you again, Bill.
Yeah. We enjoy your company.
Thank you. Thank you. All good.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care, Bill.
All right. Rodney, would you take the next first section 5, the first one on section 5?
Section 5, the Father's supreme rule. In his contact with post-divine creations, the universe Father does not exercise his infinite power and final authority by direct transmittal, but rather in his sons and their subordinate personalities. If God does all of this, what is falling from the roof? Any and all powers ever created, if occasion should arise, if it should become the choice of the divine mind, could be exercised direct. But, as a rule, such action only takes place as a result of the failure of the delegated personality to fulfill the divine trust. At such time, when you take place of such default and within the limits of the reservation of divine power and potential, the Father does act independently and in accordance with the mandates of his own choice. And that choice is always one of unfailing perfection and infinite wisdom.
Okay, so this is telling us that God rules through his creator sons, doesn't he? Right? Yeah. And the creator son rules through their subordinates, right? And this is what they're talking about here. When Lucifer rebelled, he did what? He did not fulfill his obligations, did he, of divine trust. So what happens? In a case like that, the son can take over for their father, right, and correct the problem. And that's what happens. But not only that, God the Father himself can step in if he chooses to and straighten out the problem itself. But that rarely happens, probably, because almost all ruling is done through what? The subordinates, through his sons. That's their purpose. And that's how they learn, just like we learn here on earth, experiencing things a little bit at a time.
Right. Interesting.
It is interesting.
I just did an image of a big oak tree growing and how it branches off. Like seven different big branches, and then it branches from there and it's branching down.
Uh-huh.
You can help me get to the leaves, that's little guys.
That's little guy, that's right.
And then a deer goes by and it drops off.
That's right. And that's the way it works, isn't it? In the real life, right? All right, Linda, would you take the next one?
The Father rules through his sons. On down through the universe organization, there's an unbroken chain of rulers, ending with the planetary princes, who direct the destinies of the evolutionary spheres from the Father's vast domains. It is no mere poetic expression that exclaims, "The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. He removes kings and sets up kings. The Most High's rule in the kingdoms of men."
So as much as we'd like to think, Linda, we think we rule things, but we really don't, do we?
Nope.
It's all a fantasy in our minds when it boils right down to it. Because God rules in the kingdoms of men, sooner or later, right?
Well, and it's comforting to have that assurance,
especially
when in a world chaotic like the one that we live in.
That's exactly.
You know, I can go to sleep every night and, you know, everything's under control. It may not look that way, but it is.
But it is, that's right.
Everything's under control, so.
Yeah. It's going the way it's supposed to. I think the next one.
In the affairs of men's hearts, the Universal Father may not always have his way, but in the conduct and destiny of a planet, the divine plan prevails. The eternal purpose of wisdom and love triumphs.
So that free will comes in there, doesn't it? Right? We can choose not the Father to follow the Father's will. But it will not change the divine plan of God, right? Said Jesus, "My Father who gave them to me is greater than all, and no one is able to pluck them out of my Father's hands. Had you glimpsed the manifold workings and viewed the staggering immensity of God's well-nigh limitless creation, you may falter in your concept of his primacy, but you should not fail to accept him as surely and everlastingly enthroned at the paradise center of all things, and as the beneficent Father of all intelligent beings. But there is but one God the Father of all, who is above all and in all. and he is therefore all things, and in him all things consist. Regardless of what else happens, he rules, right? And he rules in the hearts of men through the thought adjuster, right? If we just listen. That's the key right there, is just if we just listen to that thought adjuster. Oops, I already read that. I forgot to change it. All right. Rati, would you take the next one?
Certainly. Turn my speaker down a little bit here. Let's see. The uncertainties of life and the vicissitudes of existence do not in any manner contradict the concept of the universal sovereignty of God. All evolutionary creature life is beset by certain inevitable inevitabilities. Consider the following.
Right.
21 is courage, strength of character, desirable. Then must man be reared in an environment which necessitates grappling with hardships.
Okay,
alright. Disappointments.
Alright, Rodney, stop on that one. We're going to go through these one at a time. Okay? Yeah. These nine things that we're going to go through is the explanation of all things that happen on this planet. Okay? Think about this as we go through them. All the questions you have about most things that go on in this world that you think may be unjust or unfair or shouldn't be this way or shouldn't be that way, these nine statements tells you why it's this way. Okay? And we're going to find out these things are set up this way for our experiential benefit. Okay? As you could say, these are the keys to wisdom in this life if we pay attention. So let's go through the first one, courage. Right? You just read about it. Okay?
This is life itself.
Yeah, it is life itself. If you're going to have courage, you're going to have hardship and disappointments. Right? Because if you don't have hardship and disappointments, can you develop courage without them? Not likely. Right? Okay. Let's go on to the next one.
All right. You want me to read this?
No, Linda, why don't you take the next one? Let me get money.
Okay. Number two, altruism. List of one's fellows. Desirable. Then must life experience provide for encountering situations of social inequality.
Okay, this is a big one in life, isn't it? All right. Altruism, can someone tell me what that really means? Anybody know?
Altruism, is that?
Pardon me?
Serving your fellow man.
It's serving your fellow man, that's right. Being giving, right? Now, to be able to give to other beings, don't you think it would mean that there must be some kind of social inequality going on this planet to have that situation? Does that make sense?
Someone has to have a need, and someone has to have the ability to meet that need.
To fulfill that need. That's right. That's right. So all these things we think are not fair in the world, are they really not fair, or are they there to provide us with the opportunity of service? Right?
Yep.
Service and sharing.
Service and sharing. It's a benefit more than something bad, isn't it? So that brings up a point. Do you think all men are created equal?
Nope.
Probably not, are they? They're not created equal so that we have the opportunity to what? Benefit each other, help each other, right? You know, when in the Constitution where it says all men are created equal, they definitely didn't read this book, did they?
No.
They didn't. Okay.
I mean, the book tells us that we're not genetically equal either.
We're not genetically equal. And that gives us the opportunity to do what? To climb to a higher equality, doesn't it? Right? Okay. So don't sit around and wring your hands and say, oh, woe is me, I didn't get this or I didn't get that. You have the opportunity to grow. Okay. All right. You want to take the next one, dear?
Is hope the grandeur of trust desirable? Then human existence must constantly be confronted with insecurities and recurrent uncertainties.
So if we knew everything was great all the time and never going bad, would we have any reason for hope? No. We wouldn't have any exercise of that, would we? Okay, so that's why these things are out there. Insecurities, uncertainties, not knowing. If we could see what happens in the future constantly, we would never develop faith or hope, would we? Okay. Is faith, the supreme assertion of human thought, desirable? Then must the mind of man find itself in that troublesome predicament which it ever knows less than it can believe. Did y'all catch that? It ever knows less than it can believe. So to have faith, we have to know, we not be sure all the time, can you? To build faith, you have to have what? Some doubt, right? And by having that some doubt and some unsurety, we're allowed to develop faith. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Yeah, it's a benefit rather than a curse. And many people would think it would be just the opposite, wouldn't you? Okay. Rodney, would you take the next one?
Certainly. Number 5. There's a lot of truth in the willingness to go wherever it leads desirable. Then must man grow up in a world where error is present and falsehood always possible.
Is that not our earth, Rodney? Does that not explain what's going on in this world?
Yes, sure does.
Think about it. We grow up in a world where error is ever present and falsehood is always possible, isn't it? All right? And that gives us an opportunity to develop the love of truth. Right? Yeah. All right. Let me put this down a little bit here. Okay. Linda, would you take the next one? Turn on your mic, Linda.
Number six. Is idealism, the approaching concept of the divine, desirable? Then must man struggle in an environment of relative goodness and beauty, surroundings stimulative of the irrepressible reach for better things?
Does that make sense? That's why we don't have a perfect world, isn't it? Okay? This allows us to develop idealism, doesn't it? You know? Sometimes perfection is... What'd you say, Linda?
I was just going to say that I think that I don't think, I'm hoping in, and because of the default of Adam and Eve, we have an even greater opportunity to develop these things because we haven't had the benefit of some of the things or many of the things that someone who would be on a planet without a rebellion would have had.
That's right. And let me take it one step further, Linda. If we grew up in a planet of light and life, okay, on that stage, we would have much less opportunity to learn the lessons we have in our world. And that's why these angels of origin, when we get to paradise, have to know from where you started. Because if you start on a planet that's very barbaric like ours and claw your way up to paradise, you have an attitude of forgiveness, you have more faith, you have all these things we're talking about here in greater amounts than you would if you started from a perfect planet, because you don't have as much opportunity to grow and learn and do these things. Does that make sense? So that's where these angels of origin in the paradise want to know where you come from, because that determines what type of being you are and what kind of experience you come from. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's very, very important. Okay?
Is loyalty, devotion to highest duty, desirable? Then must man carry on amid the possibilities of betrayal and desertion. The valor of devotion to duty consists in implied danger of default.
Okay, think about this. If you're in the military, one of the greatest things you must develop is loyalty, okay? And devotion to duty, because many times you have to go into situations and do certain things that in the back of your mind you think, this isn't what I should be doing, okay? But you have to be loyal and you have to have a devotion of duty to trust the people that's sending you into these situations that this must be done, right? But if you don't have that danger, or that implied danger that you're going into, how can you develop those skills, right? So, you know, this is like the primer of what the world is all about around us, isn't it? These nine things, all right? Oops, I skipped over. Hang on, I'll go back. All right. Is unselfishness, the spirit of self-forgetfulness, desirable? Then must mortal man live face to face with the insistent clamoring of the inescapable self for recognition and honor. Boy, this is a hard one, isn't it? Man could not dynamically choose the divine life if there were no self-life to forsake. Man could never lay saving hold on righteousness if there were no potential evil to exalt and differentiate the good by contrast, right? This is the hardest thing for human beings to do, is become self-forgetful, isn't it? And become unselfish. Because we want the ego boost, don't we? We want everything for ourselves. Mine. You want to feel good. You want to feel important and all this. And this is these are the things that we're faced with in this life to help us develop this self-forgetfulness and unselfishness. Right? We have to keep that ego in check constantly, don't we? That's a tough one. That's a tough one for everyone. Okay. Rodney, would you take the last one?
All right, number five. Is pleasure a satisfaction of happiness desirable? Then must man live in a world where the alternation of pain and the likelihood of suffering are even present experiential possibilities?
So that ever-present possibility of pain must be here for us to appreciate pleasure. Does that make sense? And happiness. Because if we're not sad, how can we learn to be happy occasionally? Right? So these struggles we go through in life are part of our growing process, isn't it? It's not something to be cursed. It's something to be experienced and learn from and go on. Right? It's the character builders in our world, basically. Linda, would you take the next one?
Throughout the universe, every unit is regarded. I hear an echo.
Do you? Do you see any flashing coming from anywhere?
Let me turn my volume down.
All right.
Throughout the universe, every unit is regarded as part of the whole. Survival apart is dependent on cooperation with the plan and purpose of the whole, a wholehearted desire and perfect willingness to do the author's divine will. The only evolutionary world without error, the possibility of unwise judgment, would be a world without free intelligence. In the Havoni universe, there are a billion perfect worlds with their perfect inhabitants, but evolving man must be fallible if he is to be free. Free and inexperienced intelligence cannot possibly, at first, be uniformly wise. The possibility of mistaken judgment, evil, becomes sin only when the human will consciously endorses and knowingly embraces a deliberate and moral judgment.
Okay, so it sounds like from this paragraph to me, the perfect worlds of Havona are not as fortunate as we are coming, growing up in these imperfect worlds, are they? Because they can't experience the imperfection and have that free will to make those judgments of perfection. Do you see that? Okay. And it also says here that mistaken judgment, or quote-unquote evil, only becomes sin when we consciously endorse and normally embrace these deliberate and moral judgments. That's a complete different concept of what evil and sin are that we've been taught down through the ages, isn't it? You know, you have to consciously make choices of evil for it to become sin. Do y'all see that?
Mm-hmm.
So we've been misinformed for a long, long time, haven't we?
Appreciation of truth, beauty, and goodness is inherent in the perfection of the divine universe. The inhabitants of the Havona worlds do not require the potential of relative value levels as a choice stimulus. Such perfect beings are able to identify and choose the good in the absence of all contrastive and thought-compelling moral situations. But all such perfect beings are, in moral nature and spiritual status, what they are by virtue of the fact of existence. They have experientially earned advancement only within their inherent status. Mortal man earns even his status as an ascension candidate by his own faith and hope. Everything divine which the human mind grasps and the human soul acquires is an experiential attainment. It is a reality of personal experience and is therefore a unique possession in contrast to the inherent goodness and righteousness of the inherent personalities of the world.
So do y'all see in this paragraph how they're trying to explain to us that this experience and this struggle that we go through is really for our benefit? It makes us better finaliters, doesn't it? All right? It's a long one. The creatures of Havona are naturally brave, but they are not courageous in the human sense. They are innately kind and considerate, but hardly altruistic in the human way. They are expectant of a pleasant future, but not hopeful in the exquisite manner of the trusting mortal of the uncertain evolutionary spheres. They have faith in the stability of the universe, but they are utter strangers to that saving faith whereby mortal man climbs from the status of an animal up to the portals of paradise. They love the truth, but they know nothing of its soul-saving qualities. They are idealists, but they were born that way. They are wholly ignorant of the ecstasy of becoming such exhilarating choice. They are loyal, but they have never experienced the thrill of wholehearted and intelligent devotion to duty in the face of temptation to default. They are unselfish, but they never gain such levels of experience by the magnificent conquest of a belligerent self. They enjoy pleasure, but they do not comprehend the sweetness of the pleasure escape from the pain potential. Now, do y'all understand from this paragraph, while the angels want to start on the lowest part possible sphere, they want to start to learn all these lessons along with their mortal associates so that they can gain the experience and do what? Become finaliters, right? Because if they start out in Havona, they're dealing with what? Perfect beings. Are these lessons there? No, they don't need these lessons there, right? It's only by this experience do we gain the benefit of these lessons on Earth, right? Well, quite interesting, isn't it? All right, let's keep going here. Section 6, the Father's Primacy. Roger, would you take that first paragraph?
All right. Turn my speaker down a little bit. Okay, with divine consciousness, consummate generosity, the universe of the Father relinquishes authority and delegates power. But he is still private. His hands on the mighty lever of the circumstances of the universal realms. He has observed all final decisions and unerringly wields the all-powerful veto scepter of his eternal purpose with unchained, challenging authority over the welfare and destiny of the outstretched order of ever-circling creation.
So what God has planned goes, doesn't it? No doubt about it. So there is no existence outside the Father's purpose, is there? This is what I always keep coming back to, that cosmic insanity. You know, if you don't do the will of God, you're cosmically insane because of what? Because you can't fight the will of God. That's just all there is to it. Right? Linda, would you take the next one? The sovereignty of God?
The sovereignty of God is unlimited. It is the fundamental fact of all creation. The universe was not inevitable. The universe is not an accident, nor is it self-existent. The universe is a work of creation and is therefore wholly subject to the will of the Creator. The will of God is divine truth, living truth. Therefore are the perfecting creations of the evolutionary universes characterized by goodness, nearness to divinity, by potential evil, remoteness from divinity.
Okay, so much for the Big Bang Theory, right?
Right.
You know? God is in control. He always has been, always will be. There is no such thing as a universe without the control of God, right?
All religious philosophy sooner or later arrives at the concept of unified universe rule of one God. Universe causes cannot be lower than universe effects. The source of the streams of universe life and of the cosmic mind must be above the levels of their manifestation. The human mind cannot be consistently explained in terms of the lower orders of existence. Man's mind can be truly comprehended only by recognizing the reality of higher orders of thought and purpose of will. Man as a moral being is inexplicable unless the reality of the universal Father is acknowledged.
So without the knowledge of God, man's existence is non-existence, isn't it? Think about it.
Meaningless.
It has no meaning whatsoever, right? Without the concept of God. So, all these people you see running around this planet saying there is no God, what are they? They're on their way to cosmic insanity, aren't they? They're insane.
Yeah.
Think about it. That's what it is. You know? And we can either enlighten them and try to help them out, or they will what? They will not survive, one way or another. The mechanistic philosopher professes to reject the idea of a universal and sovereign will. The very sovereign will whose activity in the elaboration of universe laws he so deeply reverences. What unintended homage the mechanist plays the law creator when he conceives such laws to be self-acting and self-explanatory. In other words, they could not even exist without the Father. Right? It's like a non-reality argument, if you think about it. Of course, they would never tell you that. All right. Rodney, would you take the next one?
It is a great pleasure to humanize God. It's definitely a concept of being blown out of Jester. But even that is not so stupid as completely to mechanize the idea of the first great source and center.
Okay, so God's personality is not our personality, right? God does not have our personality's traits. He doesn't get jealous, right? He doesn't hate, right? He doesn't get angry. You know, all these things are human things, not the personality of God. And it's even more stupid to go on with the idea that the mechanism of the universe runs by itself without God, right? That's even more dumb. But there are people that believe this. And they'll try to everything in the world to convince you that that's the case, right?
Roger?
Yeah.
Was it Lucifer that said that the universe is self-existent?
It was. It was Lucifer that said that. That's exactly right. He was going on the fact of this mechanistic concept that the universe runs itself, right? And that God the Father doesn't really exist, right? That's because he had never been there, never seen it, because he had never had the opportunity to get that far, did he?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's why these the created sons of God by the Creator's sons want to come down and serve Earth so badly so that they can gain experience and eventually start this pathway of progression too. Right?
Right.
It all works to the plan of God.
Right.
Does the Paradise Father suffer? I do not know. The Creator's sons most certainly can and sometimes do, even as do mortals. The Eternal Son and the Infinite Spirit suffer in a modified sense. I think the Universal Father does, but I cannot understand how. Perhaps through the personality circuit or through the individuality of the thought adjusters and other bestowals of his eternal nature. He has said of the mortal races, "In all your afflictions I am afflicted." He unquestionably experiences a fatherly and sympathetic understanding. He may truly suffer, but I do not comprehend the nature thereof.
Can you understand the fact that you may be torturing your thought adjuster? Think about that. You may be torturing your thought adjuster and all these other beings that aren't recognizing God every single day. By doing the things you do and by not following the will of God, that thought adjuster is trying to bring you to paradise eventually, right? Bring you to the point where it can fuse with you and start you on your way to the Paradise Father, right? And when you do these ridiculously stupid things and take these stupid stands about God not being alive and stuff, don't you think that's torturing to the thought adjuster? You know? Because all it wants to do is help you, right? And love you, right? Number 7, the infinite and eternal ruler of the universes of universes is power, form, energy, process, pattern, principle, presence, and idealized reality. But he is more. He is personal. He exercises a sovereign will, experiences self-consciousness of divinity, executes the mandates of a creative mind, pursues the satisfaction of the realization of an eternal purpose, and manifests a father's love and affection for his universe children. And all these more personal traits of the Father can be better understood by observing them as they were revealed in the bestowal life of Michael, your Creator's Son, when he was incarnated on Urantia. Think of how Jesus suffered to show us the Father. You know, everything he did was to show us the Father's love. All he ever did was point to the Father, and love one another. Wasn't it? Constantly. You know, it's amazing that most of us miss that most important message in these churches every single day, right? Rodney, would you take that last paragraph and one after that?
God the Father loves men. God the Son serves men. God the Spirit inspires the children of the universe to the ever-ascending adventure of finding God the Father by the ways ordained by God the Sons through the lived ministry of the grace of God the Spirit. And this paper was brought to this parentheses here, being the divine counselor assigned to the presentation of the revelation of the Universal Father I have continued with this statement of the attributes of deity.
So he was a divine counselor, okay? And that last paragraph states very important facts, that God loves men, doesn't he? And God's sons serve men, right? And God's Spirit inspires men, doesn't it? Okay? So we have all three of the parts of the Trinity working with us all the time. Isn't that a beautiful paper?
It's wonderful.
It really is. I just love this. Let's say a little prayer and we'll close out for the night, okay? Father, we want to thank you for bringing us together again tonight. We want to thank you for these wonderful lessons you've given to us. Let us take this primer that you've given us, this revelation, apply it to our lives that we might benefit one another and benefit others and ourselves, and learn our experiences so that we can better serve, be better prepared for what the mansion world when we get there, that we might make our own path easier and we might benefit each other. We thank you and we give you the praise in your son Michael's name, Jesus of Nazareth. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you for joining us, folks. Please come see us again. Give me a minute and we'll have a word to you.